Hi, this is Mike McNamara, and you're listening to All Marine Radio on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
Tuesday morning to you. Mike McNamara with you. Yeah, I've been up since like 4 whatever. 4:20, as a matter of fact. I got a longer leash. Yeah, now I can walk around while I'm doing the show. I've been contemplating this. I can't even tell you how long. I'm like, but it occurs to me when I print something, and I have to try to reach for the printer, and I can't quite get there and stay plugged in. Yeah, that's when it occurs to me. But then I'm like I always pull my headset off, grab it, and then throw my headset back on. But now I don't have to do that. In fact, I could probably make a head call with this thing. Hold on, let me test it out. Yeah, I can like walk down the hall. How about this? Oh, yes. I could straight up make a head call. And then there's call in school. You're eating in school? Unbelievable. So, yeah. I'm not chained to my seat anymore. So, anyway. That was part of my improvements as I was being Mr. Construction. That's right, Mr. Home Depot himself. So I get up at 4:20 to do. I go to bed at 1 to do post traumatic winning with the University of Arizona Midshipmen, the Wildcats. Yeah, in fact, I gave him a little fake motivation going out the door. Hey, have a great Wildcat day. They all started laughing. And I get up. First of all, I finished the studio yesterday, and I have to tell you this: there's not many things I do that turn out perfect. My studio did, though. It's awesome. I can't tell you. Yesterday, Colleen showed up, and we're checking it out, and she's like, "Dad, wow." I'm like, no kidding, huh? So I was doing like artistic stuff yesterday. Mm-hmm. I do it on occasion. And so I put had to put a different backing on the back of a piece of artwork, you know, so it looks right, make sure things were straight. And then when, you know, Colleen and I did lighting last night. And so, and it was perfect. Then I was even doing more like camera shit. So it's got this great autofocus. But for this stuff, I'm essentially seated at a podium or standing at a podium. And so I could manually focus the camera. And so I did. I thought, you know what? I don't need it like doing automatic focusing the whole time. I'll just, you know, I'll do manual focus and then I'll be in focus the whole time. So I did that. So I was doing stuff like that. And then, so got up this morning and it's, and there's stuff in post-traumatic winning, and I'll play some of it here for you in a minute, that has never been in the presentation before. Yeah. And so that's cool. That I'm doing new material. And so again, post-traumatic winning, I now conceive of it a little bit different. I think it should be done over the course of 2 days. I know when you're doing it with large units, I can't do it like that. But I now believe, because we're going to do it today and tomorrow with the University of Arizona. So, and I think that's the way, that's probably the best way, or either a morning and an afternoon session. Because it doesn't put as much time pressure on me to stuff it all into 2.5 hours. So I was doing that, and it was good. It was good. And I'll tell you, the other thing that it's really interesting to me is my requirement for the person who introduces it. And my requirement for the person who introduces is, as you've probably heard me say before, I don't need anybody that, you know, say, Mac is a retired Marine and he does this thing and it's pretty popular and we all know how important mental health is. I don't need that shit, right? And so, so I ask whoever's going to introduce it, I'm laughing because I'm walking around in my bedroom, not my bedroom, my studio. And, I'm now folding a pillowcase while I do this thing. See all the collateral benefits that come with being mobile. So, wait a minute. I lost my train of thought. Oh, about the person who introduces it. So I met Kevin Norton, who's the colonel over at the University of Arizona. I met him when he reached out after listening. And he I want to say, was the regimental commander of 4th Marine Regiment at Camp Schwab in Okinawa. And the version of the national anthem that you're of the Marines hymn, he loves that I play. He emailed me, hey, I'm a huge fan of the show, love to listen to the conversations. Where did you get that? I said, some parent recorded it, and Patrick sent it to me to watch the video, but I heard the singing, and it just motivated me. He goes, could I get a copy of that? And he found Patrick on Okinawa and got a copy of it. So anyway, Kevin told a story about being on recruiting duty. Now, these guys, you know, with multiple combat tours, and when they tell a story, what do they tell a story about? Three of his recruiters who are going to recruit on a weekend in the evening, just kind of a meet and greet thing, because they got to make mission, you know, and this is in 2005, so the war is going on, and they got to make mission, so they're in New Jersey, and they hit a patch of ice, and there's fatalities among his recruiters, and he goes to the hospital, and you know, they couldn't contact somebody's next of kin, so he had to sign papers to make decisions to, you know, and there stuff like removing a part of the skull when somebody's brain is swelling to give the brain room, and all the stuff that you do when you're trying to save somebody's life, you know, and then there's families there, there's wives, there's children there. And, you know, it's just this awful experience. Well, to me, it's interesting, you know, because until you open up and talk about that, everybody, you know, if you're in the military, what they think is, oh, you know, it's your combat experience. And, so it's interesting to hear those things. And then, I think it's even interesting as we hear, as I mean, I'm talking about, you know, I'm introducing post-traumatic winning. And so then I'm talking about my family. How did I get here? And then, you know, my sister Maureen, one of my two younger sisters, died in 2015. She essentially froze to death. And so I put a different picture of her in the presentation this time. And it's a picture of her playing football. My sister Maureen was a really, really good athlete. She played with us growing up. You know, we're playing football as kids, and Maureen's playing. And she was good. She could throw. She's a shortstop playing softball. She played basketball and score all the points. And then she goes to high school, and her high school during Spirit Week, they divide the high school in half. And to show you how long ago it was, half the school was Cowboys and half the school was Indians, if you could imagine such a thing. And so then on the Friday, they played a football game, a flag football game. Well, they practiced for the game for like 2.5 months. So Maureen would go to football practice, and they'd play practice games against other high schools. And so she's a freshman. She's the quarterback of the football team of her half of the school. And so my dad and I are standing there watching with my cousin Tom, and the first play of Maureen's athletic career, she throws like this 30-yard bullet, hits this girl right in the hands who runs like 50 yards with it for a touchdown. And everybody's like, what the hell was that? Right? We've never seen somebody throw a football like that. But I knew it was coming. And you're sitting there watching, and you're like, holy shit. And the TV station used to come down and film it. But anyway, so that picture goes up, and I could feel myself getting emotional, right, about it. And so, to me, it's the beautiful thing about post-traumatic winning is is that young people don't think that older people, adults, deal with this stuff. You know, I've said it repeatedly when General Furness talks about, you know, what it's like to have 100 Marines under his command killed. And then he talks about, you know, the day he found out his daughter was mentally retarded. And he can't talk about that without getting emotional. And he uses emotional terms. He said, you know, the realization that my little girl was never going to be a mama, uses the word mama, right? That I would never walk her down the aisle. But the importance of that is that young people don't believe that we deal with that stuff. And so it's always interesting to listen, you know, to the stories that people tell when they introduce post-traumatic winning, because it's a requirement, not an option. If we're going to do this thing, you got to be a part of it. And it changes the whole vibe of it. And so anyway, it was a cool morning. And then we'll do the second piece tomorrow. But the studio, man, I'm going to tell you, I can't tell you how excited I am. Because, you know, it's like it worked. I conceived this thing and then built the son of a bitch. And it worked. The only thing that went wrong was the battery in my camera died. So we take, you know, I get this text message. Hey, if we could take a break. So we had been going for a couple hours. And we take a break. And I come back and I look at my, you know, the computer screen. And everything's working perfect. And I'm sharing my screen with them. And then there's a little picture of me that's coming from my Sony A7III, beautiful camera, right? It's awesome. And so I come back from the break. I get something to drink. I go to the bathroom. I come back, and my screen's blank. I'm like, what happened? The camera died during the break. How perfect was that? So then I plug the camera in, but I wasn't sure, but I don't think it can charge while it's operating. I think you have to shut it off in order to charge the battery. So anyhow, I turn it, I plug it in, I turn it back on, and it comes on. And then it goes off again like 5 minutes later, and then I just flip it over to my laptop camera. And so everything ultimately worked. But that's the only, that was the only flaw, and it was, I don't think, very noticeable for most people. So, yeah, it was cool. But but again, the coolest part is what the studio represents, and that is the ability to do creative content, to reach more people, to change more lives. Okay. Now, I want to play for you. I want to play for you some stuff that's in Post-Traumatic Winning that has never, ever been in Post-Traumatic Winning. Yeah, pretty cool. If you can't tell, I fucking love my job. I love my job. Oh, man. Here's the first thing. Now, I played this last week, screwing around. But it made me think because the ending statement is so profound. So this is from, this is Al Pacino at a disciplinary hearing in Scent of a Woman.
Are you finished, Mr. Slade?
No, I'm just getting warmed up. I don't know who went to this place. William Howard Taft, William Jennings Bryan, William Tell, whoever. Their spirit is dead, if they ever had one. It's gone. You're building a rat ship here. A vessel for seagoing snitches. And if you think you're preparing these minnows for manhood, you better think again. Because I say you are killing the very spirit this institution proclaims it instills. What a sham. What kind of a show are you guys putting on here today? I mean, the only class in this act is sitting next to me, and I'm here to tell you, this boy's soul is intact. It's non-negotiable. You know how I know? Someone here, and I'm not going to say who, offered to buy it. Only Charlie here wasn't selling.
Sir, you're out of order.
Out of order? I show you out of order. You don't know what out of order is, Mr. Trask. I'd show you, but I'm too old. I'm too tired. I'm too fucking blind. If I were the man I was 5 years ago, I'd take a flamethrower to this place. Out of order. Who the hell do you think you're talking to? I've been around, you know. There was a time I could see. And I have seen boys like these, younger than these, their arms torn out, their legs ripped off. But there is nothing like the sight of an amputated spirit. There is no prosthetic for that.
Now listen to that last part again. There's nothing like the sight of an amputated spirit.
Arms torn out, their legs ripped off. But there is nothing like the sight of an amputated spirit. There is no prosthetic for that.
So what if I could tell you, what if I told you that there is a prosthetic for that? What if I told you not only can you provide the prosthetic, right, but you could regrow the limb? What if I offered you that proposition? Would you believe it? Because in my opinion, that's what post-traumatic winning does. Post-traumatic winning offers a prosthetic to somebody with an amputated spirit. Because you know, you want to know what? They've gone down the road of trauma. They've gone down the road of therapy. They've gone down the road of medication. And what did it offer them? Nothing. It offered them numbing themselves. It offered themselves staying busy. Right? To get through this. Right? That's what it offered them. And so what do people conclude? Well, they conclude that that's as good as it's going to get for them. That's what they conclude. Well, what happens if that's not true? What happens if that isn't true? What happens if there's a better way? What happens if there's another path? And what happens if I can show you that that path exists with certainty? You know what that does? I'll tell you what it does. It restores hope. That's right. It restores the hope that I can live the life that I want, that I could live a great life, even with this shit in my life. That's the prosthetic device the post-traumatic winning provides. That certainty, no fucking doubt. Matt Kiker can go there. Stacy Falzerano can go there. Tim can go there. All these people go there. I go there. I fucking live there. For the love of God, I'm Lord of the Manor there. Right? I am. So think about this.
But there is nothing like the sight of an amputated spirit. There is no prosthetic for that.
There is, and it's called post-traumatic winning. And not only can you provide the prosthetic, but then what can happen is you can help them regenerate the limb. How fucking cool is that? But I was goofing around last week, and I was playing audio that I love. And I played this. And when I heard that, that's why I say listen to Viktor Frankl's book. Right? Listen to Frankl's book. And what happens? Well, you hear shit differently. You hear it differently. It doesn't sound the same. Right? And so I've seen this scene. I've heard that audio. That last part never jumped out at me, but it does now. And that's why you should listen to Man's Search for Meaning on a regular basis, at least once a year. So I included that in there this time. Okay. And now, what else is in there for the first time? General Neller. I talked about with him, having interviewed him, and he said some stuff, but I couldn't find it. So I called him and I said, hey, I want you to re-record something for me. And he said, okay, what? And I told him, he goes, yeah, that's easy. When do you want to do it? I said, well, could you do it this day? And he said, sure. So anyhow, this is General Neller, and what he's talking about is the fact that a lot of people confuse combat. When we say trauma, everybody in the Marine Corps goes combat. But the truth is, listen to the numbers, right? Who commit suicide, who never even deployed. And so this is the first time I've included this audio of him saying this.
But the fact is, when you do the data and the forensics like we do on every time a Marine attempts to take their own life or gets in trouble or kills themselves, the reality is for those that kill themselves, the great, great, great majority, I don't know, 80, 90%, they've never deployed, let alone being in combat. So how do you square that? So if there's trauma, it's happened either before they came into Marine Corps or something happened to them while they've been in that affected them.
So I put that in, trauma is trauma is trauma, but I'll probably put it back in a second time in the leadership piece of that. So what does that tell you? If 80 to 90% of the suicide comes from people that have never deployed, right? It's based on more than likely a pre-existing condition that was exacerbated by more stress and more strain in their life. And permanent solution, temporary problem. And if that is the case, then you have to understand that that's who you're dealing with. And I said, if there's been a great epiphany for me doing post-traumatic winning, and there's been a few of them, one of them certainly is the number of people that and the amount of sexual violence and child abuse that's resident in the people that walk through the door long before they ever become Marines. So that audio is in it. And then there's one other piece of audio for the first time. That's another Neller piece of audio. And it has to do with alcohol. Huh. Did I not put it in? I thought I did. Maybe I didn't. Yes, I did. Hold on. Here it is, talking about alcohol.
If I told you I could give you some advice that had almost 100% probability of improving your success in life, would you be interested in knowing what that is? You'd probably say yes. And I would say, hey, you need to be more respectful of alcohol. But yet, that point gets lost because people think you're trying to tell them how to live their life. No, I'm just telling you what your life is going to be like if you don't have behavior that's going to contribute to success.
If I could tell you one thing to make you more successful in your life that I knew with certainty it would be true. And see, he soft sells it. Be more respectful of alcohol. What are you trying to say to me? What I'm going to say to you is you contribute to how fucked up your life is by the way you drink. See, he's a general, so he doesn't talk like that. Right? He doesn't talk like that. So that's included again. And there's a few other things that are included. I started using the term flat black traumatic wisdom. And I've got a couple of slides that say that. So that's new. I put a slide in with me with Sean Hannity receiving an award. That's in there. I talk about me broadcasting. The pictures of my sisters. My sister is new. There's a picture of the Crucible in there that's new. When I talk about you know the difference in our culture, the way they got raised, young people, and the way I got raised, right? Awards for showing up, are meaningless, right? You can't give a kid self-esteem. And then there's a picture. There's 1, 2, 3, 4 pictures of Marines receiving their Eagle, Globe, and Anchor at the ceremony during the Crucible. When they finally become United States Marines and the emotional experience that is. Because they went to boot camp, they weren't sure they'd get through. And they now all of a sudden they're a United States Marine. Why is that so meaningful? Because they earned it. Right? Esteem is earned through hard work and achievement. That's where esteem comes from. So I think that's pretty much the extent of what's new in post-traumatic winning. But anyway, it was a, if you can't tell, I love doing it. And, you know, it's real interesting, to hear the voices and hopefully what's going to happen with this, like what tends to happen everywhere with post-traumatic winning is they go off and they do good things. They start making a difference in people's lives and whatnot. So anyway, with all that said, good morning to you here on a Tuesday morning. The United States Marine Corps Band makes this morning official. Good morning. Thank you. And this is dedicated to my friends at the University of Arizona. First of all, can't say thank you enough for the opportunity to spend some time with you, and then hopefully change some lives. And in the course of changing lives, those people will go out and change other people's lives. So if you can't tell, right, I've never done this show like right after doing post-traumatic quitting, how excited I am to do it, and how what a great experience it is. So this is dedicated to Kevin Norton, Colonel Type, who's the MOI over there, and everybody else who's helped made it happen. And then most of all to the midshipmen who are a part of that organization who will go on to the Navy and the Marine Corps. Thank you, and pay attention and go change somebody's life.
You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so young folks, you ignore what I just said.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds, and win. You got to win.
Winning, not going to lie to you, it's important. But he or she tried hard. They don't know what trying is even about yet.
Oh,
you get a bad response from that. But it's true. Oh, you think you tried hard? Do you? Oh, pumpkin, come here. Let me give you a hug. Get your ass in there, right? And you do it this time. I don't give a shit about your effort. You do it. Got it? Okay. And then they do, and then they're like, oh my God. Oh, what a miracle. Don't give me that I tried bullshit anymore. Doesn't make you better, any friends, but it's the better way. Yeah. Trying doesn't count for much. Unless you want to be a loser. Currently, sunny and 64 in Quantico. Down the coast, Camp Lejeune, it is mostly sunny, 72. Marine Corps Base 29 Palms is sunny and 74. Most importantly, Camp Pendleton, partly sunny and 67 normal degrees. Thank God. A bit too hot here. Camp Smith in Hawaii, dark, cloudy, and 72 in Okinawa. Dark, cloudy, 75 in Darwin in the southern hemisphere on the northern coast of Australia. It is dark, cloudy, 78. And in Oslo, that's in Norway, it is raining and 53 degrees. That is a look at your weather here on a Tuesday. This is Junior Walker. President Trump plans to travel to the debate in Miami, Florida next week. So D. Trump out crushing it. Yeah. So anyway, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll check some news headlines. Show's only an hour today because of the post-traumatic winning presentations, but that's all right. More of All Marine Radio coming up next, right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
We used to get together every week. She's been home from her last deployment for months now, and I haven't seen her once.
He's just been different since he got back from Iraq. One minute he's ready to go, and the next he doesn't want anyone around.
The nightmares are back and seem to be getting worse. Shouldn't he be sleeping better after all these years?
A lot of people don't understand what veterans go through during their service or when they come back, and that's okay.
But everyone can help.
You can make a difference in the life of a veteran.
You stood by us when we were in uniform, so stand by us now.
Like my brother did, when he wouldn't take no for an answer.
Like my wife did, when she asked the right questions.
Like my friend did, when she made the call.
Take a stand for those who served our country.
If you're a veteran in crisis, or know one who is, the Confidential Veterans Crisis Line is here for you. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Chat at veteranscrisisline.net or text 838-255.
We all share a common journey. We wanted to serve our country, stand for something bigger than ourselves, and protect the things we love. Although we were ready to face any mission, help those in need, and make a difference. For some of us, coming home was more of a challenge than we expected. In the service, we had each other's backs. But as veterans, it can sometimes feel like we're all alone, even when surrounded by our loved ones.
If you're a veteran or service member in crisis, or know one who is, call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Chat at veteranscrisisline.net or text 838-255.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara. And you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Just
We will check some news stories. The top stories in Early Bird today, the president. You know, I was in Home Depot, and this guy helping me, because I need help, because Home Depot will give you, you know, 10% off if you're a, you know, if you're a retired military. So I, even when I do self-checkout, I'll say, could you help me? I tell him I'm a retired veteran and blah, 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 blah. And they're always extremely helpful, right? And so, so this kid starts talking about the news and something, and, you know, I make some like, oh, yeah, blah, blah, blah. And then, and he said, you know, it all changed with Trump. And, you know, it made me think of our discussion about, lack of critical thinking skills, you know, and he believes that Trump changed everything. Right. And so, I mean, it goes back to, you know, thinking critically about things. And so I started thinking about that. I said, but, you know, it shouldn't surprise anybody. And I'll tell you what, I started reading, you know, what was in my head was the article I read yesterday, the opinion piece written by a liberal about cancel culture and about liberals. And if you weren't around yesterday or didn't listen, let me just read you the last part of this essay. All right? It's an op-ed piece that ran in the Seattle Times about cancel culture. And so I had this booming around in my head as I thought about that, right? The key to advancing liberalism is not latching onto a set of premeditated means, but identifying and fighting for the right ends. We're flawed humans and will almost certainly choose the wrong or incomplete means at times. An ecosystem of open debate and constructive listening and criticism is the key to together discovering the best means to advance objectives such as equality, progress, and justice. So open debate, constructive listening, and criticism, right? Sounds like articulate discourse to me. I could be wrong, but I think that's what he's talking about. There are myriad perverse consequences that emerge when we try to stifle thought and speech. These things that we don't like to hear about. If we don't try to solve the fundamental problem behind the speech that we dislike and work only to mitigate the symptoms by censoring it, we drive the problem somewhere else, out of sight, out of mind, and into the gutter. Untoward ideas silenced by polite society inevitably go underground. They won't disappear simply because we don't like them and censor them. Worse, silencing these ideas might mean stifling knowledge about their very existence. That helps make bad ideas fester, spread, and mutate before they can be countered with facts, logic, and evidence. What promoting unfettered thought and speech does is allows us to weaken the viruses of the bad, untested, and morally bankrupt ideas before they infect all of society. It smokes them out and allows us to interrogate them. Free speech, it turns out, is the best vaccine against the speech we don't like. The simple fact of the matter is that censoring speech is a recipe for liberalism and regression. I'm sorry, is a recipe for illiberalism and regression. That is, and always has been, the reactionary way. Perhaps today's left, now this is written by a liberal, perhaps today's left wants to make common cause with those who throughout history have used social and political means to eliminate people perceived in their day as heretics. If so, why not just admit it? Alternatively, the left should revitalize its historical commitment to free and open debate. That's Victor Mercado, an avowed liberal and professor of political science at the University of Washington. So amazing, right? So I have that in my head. So how do you get there? How do you get there? How do you get to a spot where a guy in Home Depot would say it all changed with Trump? And, you know, and I didn't make a comment, you know. But what changes? So when news reporters become advocates, when teachers become advocates instead of moderators of open discourse, of respectful exploration, of heated debate, when you have that cocktail going, that's how you, as Will says, doesn't get past the second question. You don't even get to the second question. Because they don't understand it. They don't get it. They don't get the role of free speech. They don't understand the role of articulate dissent. They don't get it. Why? Because everybody they hear says the same thing. And again, I go back to, again, this thing in my head, and it starts with shit going on in Portland. Just seems like weird Portland shit. And then shit going on in Berkeley. Well, there's always something crazy going on in Berkeley. But this intolerance that was allowed to happen, right, begets this intolerance that you see around the country. And then it runs its course. And I said, you know, that's what's going to have to happen. All these people that defund the police, they're all going to see crime. They're all going to see people in poor communities pay for it with their lives. That's what's going to happen. With certainty. And what are you seeing around the country? Oh, Mac, what a genius. What you're seeing is city council members in Minneapolis and other parts of the country that were screaming defund the police months ago are now saying, hey, wait. My constituents are up my ass and they're not real pleased. And I've got people filing to run against me left and right for my defund the police stance. Because crime is going up. I think people just don't understand what we really mean when we say this shit. No kidding. I mean, that's what they say. That's what they say. So how do you get there? You have teachers that don't believe they should be stewards of intellectual discourse anymore. They believe they should be activists. They believe they, and if you see these people interviewed, they believe they have the right to prohibit you from saying things that they don't like. And when you, and I don't care what your perspective is, when you believe that, what happens is that shit spreads. It spreads. And today it's this idea. Well, tomorrow it's that. That not only do I have the right, but I have the obligation not to let you speak. So it's interesting. We're going to have to discover some fundamental truths again in our society. So pretty amazing stuff. Anyway. So the president back at the White House. Okinawa Marines are investigating a bloody weekend brawl at a seaside tourist hub. Now, what does this mean? How many guys got into a fight? Talk to Marines and listen to them on Monday, what do you hear? You hear their stories about bar fights and all the dumb shit they did. Stars and Stripes. Camp Foster, Okinawa. The Marine Corps is investigating how a bloody brawl occurred Saturday night between about two dozen off-duty U.S. military personnel at American Village in Okinawa, a tourist hub. An argument that started in a line to order food at cafe and pizza bar, oh yeah, around 10 p.m. escalated into spilled blood, broken glasses, a manager told Stars and Stripes. Oh yeah is a popular bar and pub-style food chain on the second floor of Oak Fashion Building. Quote, I was surprised there was a fight, said the manager, who asked that his name not be published. The manager said he ordered the arguing men onto a terrace to maintain social distancing. There, a scuffle ensued, and the men were asked to leave. The fight continued outside the front door of the bar. Outside, about two dozen men shoved, punched, and beat each other, the manager said. Videos of the fight uploaded to Facebook show a tangle of bodies, punches being thrown, one man assaulting another apparently unconscious man with a martial arts move. Flip-flops and fedoras litter the ground. The manager said he called police about 10 minutes into the incident. The man ran when the police arrived. Two service personnel were returned to the establishment. Two who returned to the establishment were handed over to Marine security forces. Doesn't say who the military members were or what service they belonged to. Could be Air Force guys. Senator calls on the Army Secretary to give new West Point cadets access to uniforms that fit women. Senator Maggie Hassan, Democrat of New Hampshire, asked Army Secretary Ryan McCarthy to review a gender-neutral policy of issuing all West Point cadets unisex Army combat uniforms because it then forces women entering the academy to purchase better-fitting uniforms designed for females' bodies. Never ends. Let's see. General Milley apologizes for quip about staff, about the House Intelligence Committee Chair, Adam Schiff. Uh-oh. What did he say? General Mark A. Milley, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, in a tweet on Monday apologized for a remark he made Thursday about a ranking congressman during a change in leadership at the Defense Intelligence Agency. Today I spoke with the Honorable Representative Adam Schiff and apologized for a comment I made in jest during opening remarks at the DIA change of command, the chairman said in a tweet. My comments were in no way meant to be offensive. Milley presided over a change of directors at DIA. The event, like many others, was downsized. About 50 people attended. Representative Adam Schiff, who's a Democrat from California, chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, apparently was invited to witness Lieutenant General Robert Ashley relinquish the agency to Lieutenant General Scott Barrier, but did not attend. Milley made note of Schiff's absence at the beginning of his remarks. Quote, I actually thought I was looking at the invite list and saw Adam Schiff. Congressman Adam Schiff was here. He didn't, I don't think, show up, but I'm pretty sure CIA has an empty seat, so that's appropriate for covert operations. Oh, the CIA made him go away? Millie continued, "We don't have ABC, NBC, CBS, but I thought we were going to have a hearing when I saw Schiff. I wasn't sure if it was going to be a hearing or an indictment. I wasn't sure." Oh, that. Nice. Why would he say that? Why would he say that in public? Yeah, that's, you know what? That's not good. That's not good. I'm surprised. All right. Next, from the Wall Street Journal, a couple of headlines. Top headline, Trump plans to attend the debate, plays down virus. President isolates at the White House after leaving Walter Reed. The Fed chairman, Jerome Powell, says U.S. faces tragic risks from potential lack of economic support. So in this election year, when we don't agree on too much, right? Now you have the Fed warning, and his most ominous warning yet. About the future. Nobody will pay attention, right? Doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is that we win the election. So, let's see. Europe's second COVID wave starts to spill over from young to old. You know, to me, there's some pretty basic lessons relative to COVID, right? And that is, one, if you're elderly, you know, you have to take great lengths. I mean, if you're going to be cavalier about it, and what's happened at universities, right, is young people, right, they begin to congregate again. What do? They go to parties. And they don't do what they're supposed to do. And then the numbers go up. And that's part of us learning to live with this. Let me tell you, I mean, staying at home, in my opinion, it's amazing that we've done it for this long. Amazing. So, yeah, Wall Street Journal. Next, I'll tell you what is becoming the thing of the thing of the thing is every news story you click on now, you can listen to it. Yeah, it's a better way to listen to stuff, I believe. Instead of me having to, I can listen to articles while I'm driving. I did that the other day with a Wall Street Journal opinion piece. Yep. And I thought, wow, what a good idea. What a good idea. USNI News. Former U.S. Forces Korea commanding general. Pausing exercises are no longer relevant to North Korean nuclear negotiation. So we should begin operations again. Next headline, introduction of the Air Force's Next Generation Air Dominance Program. Whoa. NAVAIR has a new boss. The HMS Queen Elizabeth Strike Group, they're at sea now. How about that? With American F-35s. I'm not sure if that's a good or bad idea. Like, oh, hey, we're doing something with them. Why don't they have their own 35s? Why are they forced to go ahead and why are we doing that? The kind of interesting little story in Marine Corps Times this morning. Then we'll do the top five and stories in early bird, and then I'm getting out of here. The headline, Greater Love Hath No Man. Marines in Congress request Camp Reasoner sign be sent from Vietnam to the United States. And the picture that they show is a picture of 1st Recon Battalion Marines at Camp Reasoner. Now, there's a Reasoner Hall at the basic school named after Frank Reasoner. Who is Frank Reasoner? Frank Stanley Reasoner, United States Marine Corps officer who was awarded the Medal of Honor posthumously for his heroic actions above and beyond the call of duty in 1965 during the Vietnam War. Born on 16 September 1937 in Spokane, Washington, he was killed on 12 July 1965 at the age of 27 years old. Interesting. He graduates from high school in 1955, enlists in the Marine Corps 3 months before his 18th birthday, completes recruit training in August, promoted to PFC, designated as an airborne radio operator in 1956. And he goes to a series of comm schools. He's next assigned to Marine Wing Service Group 37 at El Toro, where he was promoted to corporal. Transferred to the Naval Academy Prep School in Bainbridge, Maryland in 1957, served as a guard at Marine Barracks at Annapolis. 1958, promoted to sergeant. Gets appointed to West Point. While at West Point, he letters in baseball and wrestling and wins 4 straight brigade boxing championships in 4 different weight classes. Upon graduation, he's awarded a Bachelor of Science and returns to the Marine Corps as a second lieutenant. Some Army guys do that. Promoted to first lieutenant in December. Goes to the Pacific. He's with 3rd Reconnaissance Battalion, assigned initially to the 1st Marine Brigade at Kaneohe Bay. He was designated as the commanding officer of Alpha Company 3rd Recon Battalion. On 12 July, he was leading an 18-man patrol near Dai Lok, which is 18 kilometers southwest of Da Nang, the big port and air facility, when the 18-man patrol was attacked by a company-sized Viet Cong force. He was killed and 3 others wounded in the engagement. The USS Reasoner was named after him. Now, here's his Medal of Honor citation. For conspicuous gallantry and intrepidity at the risk of his life above and beyond the call of duty, the reconnaissance patrol led by 1st Lieutenant Reasoner had deeply penetrated heavily controlled enemy territory when it came under extremely heavy fire from an estimated 50 to 100 Viet Cong insurgents. Accompanying the advance party and the point that consisted of 5 men, he immediately deployed his men for an assault after the Viet Cong had opened fire from numerous concealed positions. Boldly shouting encouragement and virtually isolated from the main body, he organized a base of fire for an assault on the enemy positions. The slashing fury of the Viet Cong machine gun and automatic weapons fire made it impossible for the main body to move forward. Repeatedly exposing himself to the devastating attack, he skillfully provided covering fire, killing at least 2 Viet Cong and effectively silencing an automatic weapons position in a valiant attempt to effect the evacuation of wounded men. As casualties began to mount, his radar operator was wounded, and First Lieutenant Reisner immediately moved to his side and tended his wounds. When the radar operator was hit a second time while attempting to reach a covered position, First Lieutenant Reisner, courageously running to his aid through the grazing machine gun fire, fell mortally wounded. His indomitable fighting spirit, valiant leadership, and unflinching devotion to duty provided the inspiration that was to enable the patrol to complete its mission without further casualties. So, on a hill near Da Nang sat Camp Reisner, not far from where he was killed, home of the Marines' 3rd Reconnaissance Battalion and later 1st Reconnaissance Battalion during the Vietnam War. The camp was named after 1st Lieutenant Frank Reisner, the second Marine to receive the Medal of Honor during the Vietnam War, and was marked by a stone that bore a hand-lettered message to the fallen Marine. First Lieutenant Reisner sacrificed his life to save one of his wounded Marines. Quote, "Greater love hath no man," the stone said. On Monday, 12 Marine veterans and members of the House of Representatives sent a letter to Secretary of State Mike Pompeo calling on him to begin negotiations with Vietnam to have this stone sent to the U.S., where the 1st Reconnaissance Battalion will host it aboard Camp Pendleton. Mike Gallagher, a former Marine who's a Republican from Wisconsin, calls Lieutenant Reisner an American hero whose story deserves to be told for generations to come. Retrieving this memorial is a way not only to honor his legacy, but to show our undying appreciation to those who served at Camp Reisner. The old camp, located roughly 3 miles from Da Nang International Airport, is now a stone quarry, but the sign still stands at the old entrance. The hand-lettered stone and concrete sign served as a physical symbol of fallen comrades in arms to all those who entered the camp, the sign said. Why can't they just negotiate with the company that owns the land and get the stone sent? The 1st Reconnaissance Battalion Association is willing to pay any of the expenses associated with the move and hopes the sign will be placed aboard Camp Pendleton. So anyway, interesting little story. Top five stories in Early Bird this morning. And then we'll be done till tomorrow. Number one, Trump still infectious back at the White House. Number two, the world's hottest spy target, Trump's health. Number three, longer Navy deployments, fewer port calls to manage COVID-19. Yikes, right? No libo. Holy shit. Four, Taiwan says military under pressure from China as missions mount. No shit, man. That's why you should have a defense, right? Japan, hope you're paying attention. Japan just sent its largest budget ever for defense to the Diet, whatever, however the hell you say that, their Congress. Five, families of veterans who die from coronavirus would have survivor benefits protected under a House bill. That in the news, some operations headlines. Because, you know, at some point it's good to talk about operations, not just the social part of the military. U.S. military in Japan reports one new coronavirus. That's operations. Wow. ISIS terrorists known as the Beatles likely to be brought to the U.S. in coming days. You don't see that often these days. Two of the British Islamic State's terrorists, dubbed the Beatles, accused of involvement in the murders of U.S. hostages in Syria, are likely to be brought to the United States in mid-October, according to two government officials. The men, Alexa Cote and El Shafi al-Sheikh who are being held in U.S. military custody in Iraq are accused of taking part in the kidnappings of international hostages, including U.S. aid workers Kayla Mueller and Peter Kasich and U.S. journalist James Foley and Stephen Sadloff. Kotay and Elishoff admitted their involvement in the captivity of Mueller for the first time in an interview obtained exclusively by NBC News, which aired it in July. Mueller was tortured and sexually abused before her death in 2015. In the interview, the man also admitted for the first time to having beaten Foley, who was beheaded on camera by the leader of the so-called Beatles, Mohammed Ermzawi, who was killed by a Hellfire missile fired from a CIA drone in 2015. So they will be brought to the United States and face a court of American justice. So at Arlington gravesite, what do you think the most visited place at Arlington is? That's not a hard one. The gravesite of President John Fitzgerald Kennedy. Visitors to the site will have to follow one-way signage, wear masks, and socially distance. The site, the most visited at the cemetery, includes the graves of John F. Kennedy, his two brothers, Robert Kennedy, Edward Kennedy. Former First Lady Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis is buried next to her husband. There is also a memorial marker for JFK's older brother, Joseph Kennedy, who was lost on a bombing mission in World War II. His remains were never recovered. So that is a look at the news on today. And that'll do it. Thanks for listening. I'm still geeked about doing post-traumatic winning early this morning. iPhone is better for health. Let me tell you, that's a software application. So anyway, I'm talking about a cell phone. If you're making the case on health, then you lost the argument about cell phone. No, I bought an iPhone last week, and I was stunned by its limitations, to put it mildly. But I know that I don't know that cell phones are logical purchases. And the path to it was, I was curious, and I know they have a great camera, and so I thought, let me check it out. And so I did. And what I found was not particularly impressive. So I was surprised. I didn't think it would be, But yeah, it is that way. So anyhow, it's kind of an interesting little point. And so I've heard, all these different, people explaining to me. But I'm going to tell you, if you want an Android phone and you pick up an iPhone, it's stunning the limitations of things that you could do. But again, here's what Apple did. They make these beautiful phones. It's part fashion statement and cool person statement, right? And rich person statement that you have your iPhone. It's good at text messaging because you have all those little emojis that you can hit a text and say, oh, this made that person smile. This made them sad. All that. And it's got a good camera. What else do people need? But if you have an Android phone, you have those things. I don't know if you have emojis for your messaging because I don't think that's a part of everybody else's text messaging. But that's a major drawback, right? Cameras are similar. And Apple has made just a fucking killing on it, on that marketing. Yeah. I would tell you, it's an irrational purchase. And Apple people are just they're intoxicated about their iPhone. And that's why, for me, it was so surprising. I was like, oh, well, let me just see what it's all about. And then as I started messing with it, I was like, wow. This thing's a piece of shit with a nice camera and emojis for texting. If that's what you're looking for, then how about it? But anyway, on this Tuesday, I give my thanks early this morning. University of Arizona, NROTC, doing post-traumatic winning. So fired up about it. Have a great day. Don't touch the dial because you'll hear about my little experience this morning. And it had full of some new stuff. So have a great day on a Tuesday. All Marine Radio, out.